Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Today on the Brian Lehrer Show, New York City ID cards, yes. Supersized soda ban, no. Long Island Railroad strike, maybe. We'll check out what all three might mean in just a minute. Also today, an LGBT activist from Kenya visiting New York for Pride Week on one of the world's most hostile countries in which to be gay. What President Obama's labor relations loss at the Supreme Court yesterday means for hundreds of workers' rights rulings, like can you criticize your company on social media without the risk of being fired? And should you read to your children from the time they're 0 years old? That's the recommendation from the American Academy of Pediatrics. Now we'll talk about that. But let's get to New York City ID cards, yes. Supersize soda ban, no. Long Island Railroad strike, maybe. And how five renegade Democrats are coming home to their party. With Jimmy Vielkind, Albany Bureau Chief for Capital New York. Hi, Jimmy. Welcome back to WNYC.
Pleasure to be here, Brian.
And let's start with the large size sugary drinks ban. Now not merely dead, but really most sincerely dead, thanks to New York State's highest court. What happened?
Well, nearly dead for now. The state's highest court, the Court of Appeals, ruled that the city's Board of Health didn't actually have the authority to do this. City lawyers had contended that this was rulemaking. It was within the purview of the Board of Health, that this did not actually represent a change in policy. The Board of Health has historically been empowered to do regulations to prevent diseases, to help with public health causes, things that in previous decades would have included things like tuberculosis or dysentery. City attorneys under Mayor Michael Bloomberg argued that obesity was a similar epidemic and that the board should be similarly empowered. So the state's highest court rejected that argument. They didn't weigh in at all as to the merits of the soda ban or as to the merits of exactly how it was applied, whether the way it was structured and applying only to certain restaurants, but not only to certain bodegas, but not to larger grocery chains, sort of what the merits of that policy were. But for now, it's dead.
And many people didn't realize, I think we should say, that Mayor de Blasio had continued to fight for this signature power play by Mayor Bloomberg against the beverage industry. De Blasio wholeheartedly backed it. But his usual ally, City Council Speaker Melissa Mark Viverito, didn't. So listen to this from yesterday when she kind of danced on the grave of this idea. Why? Because it would have weakened her council's power.
I think that it were onerous policies. It did circumvent the city council, but that there's other ways that we can tackle clearly what is a health concern and a health issue.
Circumvent the city council. Was that Melissa Mark Viverito's main concern here, rather than, you know, whether it was selectively going to be enforced against certain restaurants but not others, or whether it was too tough on the beverage industry or on parents?
I think she has a little bit of all of it. Any elected political leader doesn't want to see the prerogative of their office reduced in any way. There's a recognition that on her part that if she ceded the city council's authority to make this kind of decision, to set the parameters of that policy about large sugary beverages or whatever policy might come up down the road, that she's essentially undermining her own power and the power of her colleagues. Also, I know that the people who brought this suit were a coalition of bodega owners and labor groups as well. This policy was most strongly fought by sort of this coalition of regular inner city people. They argued that there are people who like these beverages and they should be given the right to consume them. So I think it's good politics for her on both levels.
Well, it was really the beverage industry, right, that sunk a lot of money into state legislators' campaigns when this was an issue in Albany, and it got defeated there. And so Mayor Bloomberg tried to go around it using the Board of Health and the beverage industry, which includes labor, the people who work for the beverage industry who thought they might have fewer jobs, got together and argued that this was a matter of freedom. In America, we have freedom to choose things like whether to have a 44-ounce soda that's going to give you kid diabetes eventually. I've editorialized that I think it's a really degraded notion of freedom. But wasn't it the beverage industry really leading the charge here?
Well, certainly they were the big money behind this, and they, of course, cheered this court ruling. You know, one of the things about New York City is that so often, and we saw this most clearly under the Bloomberg administration with the smoking ban, that once the first domino falls, and New York City is a very big domino, states and other cities around the country follow. So the long-term prospects, if something like this went into effect in New York City, is going to be less soda consumption. Less soda consumption hurts the bottom line of the beverage industry. And yes, they did fight tooth and nail. And yes, they did use a, rather than argue that they needed to protect their profit margins, they did argue for individual freedom. So
I don't know why freedom, a more important definition of freedom wouldn't be the freedom of the community to come together in the democratic process to push back against the sugary drink pushers with some kind of reasonable limit. Like, if you have to consume so much of it, do it a portion at a time. But that's a dead issue now. So when Melissa Mark Viverito says there are other ways to fight the scourge of the sugary drink pushers, as she did in that clip, does she have any other plans actually on the table? Do you have any idea?
I don't at the moment. I think that people are still sort of gathering their thoughts in the face of the ban. But as this was all coming down with Mayor Bloomberg, people were arguing about how the law was sort of interestingly applied. For example, a soda, you could get a soda. Sodas were banned, but lattes were not banned. There was a lot of wiggle room. And the big argument was, why are you singling out sugary drinks when cannolis, eclairs, the famous KFC Double Down would be perfectly legitimate? So I think that whether or not...
Because those weren't the things spreading like wildfire in so many people's diets. I know this is not a debate between you and me, but
and I'm a water drinker, Brian, so I don't have much to add.
They didn't care about the spread of obesity and diabetes any more than the tobacco industry cares about people getting cancer from smoking. But all right, next topic, New York City ID cards. The mayor and the council agree on this one. Why is this back in the news?
Well, this is something that has been a priority of an empowered group of immigrant advocates. They finally have New York City Mayor de Blasio, who supports this effort. And what they're seeing and what I'm seeing on the state level is a state legislature that is perhaps about to trend back to the Democrats and about to be very favorable to these kind of policy measures. So the city council passed this law yesterday. It would allow these ID cards to go through, and the argument is that it would allow undocumented immigrants come out of the shadows to gain access to basic government services. Now there's an idea to bring this kind of idea on a state level, which I think is going to be a hot-button political issue in the coming elections this year on the state level and in our political discourse in the next session. We reported this morning that the Senate Republicans, who are desperately trying to hold on to their majority in the state's chamber, have already started to formulate their political counterattack now that they're seeing Democrats in the Independent Democratic Conference and the Mainstream Democratic Conference of the state Senate coming back together. That's a deal that we've talked about before, Brian. It happened with the blessing of Governor Cuomo and with the urging of de Blasio. Both men want to see a policy arena that is favorable to their ideology, and I think that the ID card issue is going to be front and center if that were to happen.
That's really fascinating in your story on Capitol New York today. And hold that thought, because I want to come back to the politics of that, of these renegade Democrats coming back to their party now under pressure from Cuomo and de Blasio and the Senate Republicans ginning up this idea of, the Democrats are for illegal immigrants as a way to try to get a majority with these fear tactics for more upstate Republican voters. But who likes the ID card? Well, here is Arab American community activist Linda Sarsour yesterday suggesting this will work best if the city promotes its widespread use.
The key to success is that all New Yorkers see this as trendy, see this as part of their New York City pride, and see this as something that they want to have in their wallet to ensure it's not a scarlet letter for undocumented immigrants.
So that suggests to me, Jimmy, that the point actually is to document the undocumented, to give them one government ID that they could use to get other government IDs. Is that the point?
Yes and no. The advocates say that the point is to let people do things that people with driver's licenses, like myself, can do without thinking twice, like entering a government building, a school building. If you're a parent and you have a child, say, who is an American citizen, a public school student, but your status is not fully documented, what ID do you present when you go up to a school building and it's required? So we have a system here in which government services are available in some cases to citizens and non-citizens alike, where other government privileges are only available to citizens, such as voting, jury duty. So the fear of the opponents is that you're going to blur this line and that eventually you're going to extend all these privileges of citizenship to people who are non-citizens. Of course, the counterargument, as you just heard in that clip, is that there are people who are here. They are entitled to these services, and this is a convenience for letting them live their lives. There are already similar programs in Los Angeles, San Francisco, and New Haven, Connecticut. So New York, the advocates argue, is a little bit behind the curve on this one.
Would it help undocumented immigrants get work, which I think is the biggest thing they cannot get legally without legal U.S. residency now?
Well, I think that employers will, of course, know what these ID cards mean, and they know that they require proof of citizenship to hire or to hire anybody. So to the extent that we already see undocumented immigrants who are finding employment, I don't know that this is going to have a large impact.
But it's New York City. Besides giving this convenience, and I understand what you're saying, some of the real practical applications are if somebody is here as a grown-up who's undocumented and they're kid is in the New York City public schools. Public schools don't check your immigration status, right? So you don't have to be born here. You don't have to actually be a U.S. citizen kid to go to the public schools. You just have to be of the age and prove that you reside here. Now their parents could get ID cards and get into school buildings, other government buildings, for example. But is this also kind of a nod to, you know, is it a New York City open borders card? It's our own immigration policy. It's the majority of city council and the mayor saying, look, we should have a path to citizenship in comprehensive immigration reform. And if the federal government isn't going to do it, we're going to do as much as we can under city law to help these folks lead legal lives.
Right. And also to say that they are welcome here, that yep. they are wanted in the city of New York. It's no joke, and Mayor Bloomberg talked about this ad nauseum, how he welcomed immigrants. New York City's vibrancy and strength, and in fact, its growing population is driven by immigration. This is certainly a signal to that community, and it's a signal as much to Washington lawmakers or to state lawmakers as it is to the wider world. If you come here, you will not be hunted down as an immigrant might be in other parts of the country. So I think there is some powerful signaling going on in addition to sort of the practical reasons that backers of these cards are talking about.
When will we have these city ID cards?
I don't know. I know that the vote occurred. It's possible that there could be a legal challenge, but I don't know when the program will be implemented. Mayor de Blasio has, of course, said he would sign the law, but he has not yet done so.
Listeners, want to weigh in on any of these things so far? Large sugary drinks ban, Chapter 27, the ID cards for all New York City residents, regardless of immigration status. What else? We'll get to some of the other things as we go, but how about those two? 212-433-9692, 212-433-WNYC. And yes, folks, remember that ID card, because it is also suddenly an issue in another development today, as Jimmy Vielkind, Albany Bureau Chief from Capitol New York, was just suggesting. And this is politically huge in New York State. The five renegade Democrats who aligned themselves with the Republican leadership in the state Senate have announced that they will come home to their party in this election year, notably Jeff Klein of Westchester and the Bronx, who was their leader, and Tony Avella of Queens, both of whom are facing primary challengers. So what happened here?
What happened was everyone realized that a shooting war probably wasn't preferable right now and that they will make a deal to make a deal. So the macro politics have been brewing since the Working Families Party convention at the end of May, wherein Governor Cuomo promised to push for a democratically controlled state Senate, and he explicitly threatened Klein and the four other members of the Senate's Independent Democratic Conference that he would back primaries to them in the on the Democratic line if they did not somehow reunite with the mainstream Democrats in that chamber. So what we've seen since then is we've seen lots of people marshaling the forces. It's almost impossible not to use war metaphors here. You know, the tanks lining up on the borders, powerful unions, community groups, interest groups, major donors saying that they would put their money where their mouth was. And essentially the point was to pressure Klein and to make clear that if he chose to try and put his head down and power through, he would be facing some pretty stiff competition. So what we saw was essentially an armistice, but not quite an armistice, more of a sort of a standing down. Klein said that after the November elections, he would strike a deal wherein he would ally with the mainstream Democrats led by Andrea Stewart-Cousins of Yonkers. Now, it's an important distinction that Klein won't actually be rejoining the Democratic fold. He won't be subordinate to Ms. Stewart-Cousins, but he will essentially be his own independent conference allied with them. What we've heard from sources who are familiar with this deal was that he's getting the mirror image of the current arrangement he has with Republicans. That is to say, he controls and hires his own staff. He, in addition to Ms. Stewart-Cousins, would be present in major negotiations with the governor, with the leaders of the state assembly over the budget and over other major legislation, and that he would have joint control over what measures come to the state Senate floor. Now, this deal was immediately heralded by Bill de Blasio. It was actually announced in conjunction with Governor Cuomo, and major labor unions, including SEIU 1199, the Hotel Trades Council, the United Federation of Teachers, have all said that this is something that they are excited about because it will drive forward what they have as their agenda.
And all these progressive bills, let me jump in on that, because all the progressive bills that we've been talking about on this show, how many guest spots have you had here in the last few weeks in these, you know, final days of the state legislative session? All these bills that were in the news for failing presumably could have passed if Klein and Novella hadn't voluntarily given veto power to the Republican co-majority leader. Public campaign financing, expanded abortion rights, a higher minimum wage linked to inflation, and permission for New York City to set its own minimum wage, and there were others. So if the Democrats come out of November with their Senate majority intact and this coalition that you're describing between the regular Democrats and these five independent Democrats, but now they're caucusing with the Democrats instead of with the Republicans, will all those bills likely pass the Senate next year?
Likely, theoretically, we'll have to see. Of course, the governing is always more difficult in application than it is on paper. And I remember well, Brian, in 2009 and 2010, when for the first time in a generation, Democrats controlled all the levers of state government when the Democrats last controlled the Senate. We didn't see a major rush of progressive legislation despite the promises by lots of people involved. And I still think there's going to be quibbling, there's going to be infighting. And the fact that Klein is going to sort of remain his own sovereign entity means that I think you're still going to see a sort of leftward centrist tension within the Democrats in the state Senate and therefore, by extension, within our state government. However, it does seem that a lot of the bills you just mentioned would be marked for a floor vote. Klein is in full support of all the measures you outlined, as well as the DREAM Act, which would extend state tuition assistance programs to undocumented workers. So I think that come January, we're going to see a rush of legislation, but it's not quite fair to say if the alliance had ended, say, 3 weeks ago or 2 months ago, that all these things would have happened. The current makeup of the state Senate is not such that Democrats, even if they were united, necessarily have a majority of votes on some of those important issues. The DREAM Act, for example, did come to a floor vote earlier this year. It did not pass through the state Senate. And we know that there's at least one Democrat, Reverend Ruben Diaz Sr. from the Bronx. He's the father of the Bronx Borough President. I want to make that distinction clear for listeners. He is very, very pro-life and very clear that he is pro-life. So everyone involved in this says we have to look to November. We have to see what the makeup is. And Democrats say they have to win a few more seats to make the action on these sort of progressive bills actually something that's going to be real and resonant.
So now, before we look to November, let's look for a minute to September, when there is this Democratic primary. Then we'll take some phone calls on some of these things. So be patient, folks who are on hold. What happens to these primaries? This is about renegade Democrats getting primaried from the left. So Oliver Capel from Riverdale is challenging Jeff Klein because Klein was in this coalition with the Republicans. And John Liu from Flushing is challenging Tony Avella in Eastern Queens, specifically on the grounds that he had deserted the Democratic Party. If they are now returning to the fold, does that make these primaries moot? Do John Liu and Oliver Capel go away?
You know, it's not going to be that clean, actually. What we reported this morning on CapitalNewYork.com was that rather than both sides shaking hands and burying their guns and, you know, walking away from the battlefield, it's essentially as though people are still aimed and loaded, but just slowly backing away. So Capel, when we spoke with him yesterday, said he plans to go forward. He hasn't felt that he's lost support. I think that that's going to shake out and that's going to change over coming days as it becomes clear to him that some of the major supporters or major potential supporters, including de Blasio, including some of those big unions, won't now be lining up with him. What we've already seen is some challengers against the other IDC senators, David Valesky in Syracuse, David Carlucci in Rockland County, and even Diane Savino in Staten Island and parts of South Brooklyn. Their challengers are starting to indicate to us that, yeah, now that this deal has been cut, I'm willing to go away. And then Tony Avella and John Liu in Northern Queens is sort of their own little animal. Liu was put up and is running most fervently with the backing of the Queens Democratic Party itself. And I think that it is motivated not so much by the fact that Avella went to the IDC, though they were quite angry about that, but that he, in their minds, betrayed them. The Queens Democrats invested a lot of time, energy, and effort in Avella's race against Republicans to win a seat in 2012. And then to see him go to the IDC was indefensible. So I think John Liu is going to remain a credible candidate, and I think that is going to be a primary that will very much be live going into September. And that's going to color the overall deal that Klein is able to cut with his former mainstream Democratic colleagues. Keep in mind, there are no specifics. Nothing is in writing at this point. What we have essentially is just a deal to make a deal. So these primaries will still have to shake out. I suspect, as I said, most of them will sort of fall off. But I think John Liu's run against Avella is going to be real, and it's going to be, frankly, a close race.
Should be interesting. Craig in Queens, you're on WNYC. Hi, Craig. Craig, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hi, go ahead.
Good morning. I would just like to say, you know, I think it's a bad idea with the ID cards. I believe it's rewarding criminal behavior. You know, if I don't wear my seatbelt when I'm driving or I'm on a talk phone talking, I get a ticket. It's a crime to enter this country illegally, overstay your vehicle, your visa, and other things. And communities suffer. I'm a homeowner. I live in Queens. My son's kindergarten class was bursting at the seam with 25 kids in the class. It's cause and effect. People don't want to, you know, they say, everybody's welcome. Everybody came here from somewhere, but there's a process. And when the process is skirted, other people get hurt. And why should we reward certain behaviors and other behaviors of criminals? George Mon got killed because the police target black and brown people like they do all day for drugs. But if the police were to target people and see if these workers standing on the corners had documents to illegally to work, it would be an outrage. But if you target somebody in the neighborhood and say, are you selling drugs, it's okay. I mean, it's going to be pushback, and the politicians are not seeing it.
Do you think that there should be more of a limit on the number of people coming to New York? Is that the bottom line?
No, I don't think there should be a number limit on the city should take whatever it can handle capacity. But when we let people just come freely and we just admit kids to school, Which school they go to? I live in I started out my life in Jamaica, Queens. I live in Springfield now.
Yep.
We had trailers that were supposed to be temporary. Then explosions in other communities caused schools to be built there, so they didn't have the money to build
real
a new school in Jamaica. So kids had to go in trailers that was supposed to be for a year. 15, 20 years, the trailers are still there. It's cause and effect. People can't, you can't tell me that.
Craig, thank you very much. Call us again. Larry in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Good morning, Brian. I'm a lifelong progressive. I've been a member of ACLU, Public Citizen, Common Cause, etc. That being said, I am 100% against allowing illegal aliens to be documented. I'm convinced that this is an effort by the 1% to undermine unions and the working class. What major nations on earth allow people to illegally cross their borders and settle in?
Undermine unions and wages. You think
and
that's
the
real? You
the
think that's
class,
what Mayor de Blasio and Melissa Mark Viverito are after here?
I said to undermine unions and the working class.
Okay.
In other words, the lower middle class and the poor, who would then be competing against these people who will work for less than minimum wage, etc. What major nations on earth allow people to illegally cross their borders and settle in?
So maybe that's why the Wall Street Journal editorial board endorses open borders. It's good for employers vis-a-vis labor.
Sure.
But what about de Blasio and Melissa Mark Viverito? That's not what they're about, right?
Well, I don't know. I don't know who behind the scenes is funding them. And this is why we need absolutely open doors on all the finances of everybody who runs for political office.
And what would you do as if you were king of New York? Would you say, okay, you may not move here to New York City past a certain number? In other words, New York City is closed. We now have X million people. We now have kids going to school in trailers in Jamaica, Queens, for our last caller, and all that stuff. We don't have room for any more New Yorkers. Don't move here anymore. Is that what you would do?
Well, no. I think that we need sanctions as a nation to prevent people to come here illegally. And what we need to do is provide proper jobs for our own people who are here legally and do what, you know, I don't know what the laws in other major nations are, the industrial nations, but I'm sure that most of them do not allow people to cross their borders illegally.
And Larry, I'm going to leave it there. Thank you,
Brian.
And Peter in Rutherford, you're on WNYC. Hello, Peter.
Yes, Brian, good morning. I think you guys are doing a fantastic job bringing to light issues like this. I would basically want to comment about the ID card. In my opinion, I think it's a fantastic idea for it to come out in the first place. I think it's a great platform where illegal immigrants, we don't care how they came in. Now that they're here, illegal immigrants that are participating in nation building, they pay taxes, they pay sales taxes, they have children here. This becomes a platform where they are now able to participate equally from a market economic point of view. They have access to, seeing the example that was given, I love it. They have access to seeing their kids, if their kids are now U.S. citizens. One example or one scenario which I've seen happen is in schooling. International students from time to time during their PhD courses get out of status. They become illegal immigrants not by choice, but perhaps through the length of time of their education. This program will give them the opportunity to get an ID card while they're still pursuing it. And will give them a platform to still continue doing the good work. The United States is still having problems with the human resource being exited as soon as it gets, fulfilled or grown here.
Peter, what do you say to the previous two callers who say, if a country can't control its borders and only allow in as many people as it can actually absorb without getting overwhelmed, and I realize there are economics on the other side that they're, big economic benefits to having more people, et cetera. But if they're saying if a country can't make that decision and control the number of people and just kind of gives it up like this, then what's the purpose of having immigration laws?
Well, the idea here is when they're here, immigration laws are going to be immigration laws. I believe the ID card isn't directly poised or directed at tackling immigration laws. It's directed at people that are already here. and are currently paying taxes, are currently living their lives. This gives them, in my opinion, gives them an even platform where they can continue doing what they're doing, but be more open about doing it.
Peter, thank you very much for your call. I appreciate it. And Jimmy Vielkind from Capital New York, you know, I could take calls that bring in other nuances of this or that repeat what we just heard on two sides of the ID card issue for the next 2 hours based on what's on our board. So this kind of got through before a big public debate, didn't it?
Yeah, it was an issue that sort of, from my perspective, a little bit flew under the radar. But as I said, I think it's something we're going to hear about coming up in certainly state elections. What we're hearing, again, in the context of the Senate is that statewide, Republicans are planning to be running against de Blasio and against these kind of initiatives. There's a bill in the state legislature that would essentially do a very similar thing on a statewide basis. So I think we've only heard the beginning of these kind of arguments, the push back and forth.
And then with those ID cards, people could even register to vote in Ohio and Indiana. Haha, just kidding. So we didn't even get to, and we'll do it Monday, folks. There might be a Long Island Railroad strike this summer. There are talks scheduled for today. There is definitely a mood of acrimony, at least if you listen to the public statements from the unions today. LIRR strike in a little while this summer. We'll talk about that on Monday's show. Don't worry, it won't happen by then. And we thank, for all this clarity, Jimmy Vielkind, Albany Bureau Chief for Capital New York. Thanks. Thanks a lot, Jimmy.
Always a pleasure, Brian. Thanks for having me.